you didn't articulate what Vivaldi was, and you're going to Vivaldify the world. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And the first two lyrics of her verse were, ooh, yeah, it's Vivaldi. Yeah, Vivaldi.
Not the names. It's always the names. I'm this person. I do this.
It was as bad as the España verses, baby.
That was a better verse than Vivaldi's verse. Congratulations, Philip.
Winner.
Attention. Calling all whispering hunties. Oh,
crrr. Okay.
Hi, I'm Mijan, a semi-drag race expert.
And I'm Nick. I never watched it before, until now.
And together, we are Whispering Hunties. We're a podcast about global queer culture and drag race.
Check us out wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi.
Howdy, me, John.
Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday indeed.
Also, I just want to give a shout out to our friend Eric Sosa, who's having his last block party of the season today at Good Judy. So I'm going to, after the pod, scoot on down and watch some drag queens do what they're meant to do. It's going to be so good. And Nick is going to have fun. You know, putting flowers on tables. Just kidding. I don't think anyone's getting married at your place today. But I'm so glad to be back on the pod with you because you're one of my favorite people. Spending time with you every week is a joy. Drag Race UK is back. Drag Race Holland is over. I mean, so many things. And then next week, actually, we have a fabulous Dutch drag queen and DJ who's going to be on the podcast. So we'll get to really talk in depth about how people are processing the end of Drag Race Holland. Mm-hmm. But for today, we have our lovely friend who is the designer of Ohanette, whose artwork in terms of costumery was featured on Drag Race UK season 1 and then was also featured on Drag Race UK season 2.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, no longer.
I know. Spoiler alert. I mean, well, no. If you watch the show, you already know, but unfortunately, we won't be seeing too many of his designs on the
season. We will on Instagram and then in that redemption runway if Anubis does not wear an Ohanette piece. Dead to me.
Well, there will be words.
Yeah. To give you a little more information about our guest, we have drag costumier, fashion designer, illustrator, and leaning Xena warrior princess scholar, Philip Brown. Philip hails from Northumberland and is England's resident queer creative. Taking inspiration from strong women, his work explores camp, tragedy, and reimagined histories with garments recently showcased on Drag Race season 3 and 2. His brand Ohanette, although it's in its infancy no longer, seeks to support and encourage drag and queer expression. You can find him at O_Ohanette on Instagram. And then also, if you like a good drawing, check out self_whore_trait because he can draw. And it's scrumptiously diddlyumptious.
Yeah, peep your eyes on that.
Yeah. So if our guest is the cutest thing ever, he's sassy. He knows how to sew and has very good fashion taste. So
he's got the tea. He's got the takes.
Yeah, we're basically spoiled today. And hooray, Vanessa. So let's get to it because we have a podcast to get to. But before any further ado, why don't you just lean back, just grab a snack, maybe just, you know, hug it next to somebody, pop in those headphones, you can be alone with us, and slip into that whispering hunties.
Our
art and entertainment inspire each of us in different ways. But have you ever wondered what inspires the people who create our cultural touchstones? I'm Adam Unz, and on the Spark Parade podcast, I geek out with artists and entertainers about their cultural spark of inspiration. Everything from Shakespeare to South Park. You'll hear from artists like Connor Oberst on Northern Exposure, Roisin Murphy on Terrence Conran's The House Book, and Adrian Young on Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. The Spark Parade, where artists reveal their cultural inspirations to spark the inspiration in you. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick, I am just loving my 5x10 athletic trunks with the dragon print.
Facts. I've got my bikini briefs in the neon snake print, and they look and feel amazing.
If you haven't heard, 5x10 was started with the sole purpose of creating better underwear for all men.
Which, by the way, they've totally done.
And now, they've expanded into athleisure for women, so there's a little something for everyone in the most stimulating patterns.
And they make a difference. For every purchase you make at 5x10, a 10% donation is made to charities that they partner with.
Work! Combining premium products with philanthropy? That is amazing. And it's how 5x10 was created. So, if you support this brand, you're supporting LGBTQIA+ charities.
And if that's not enough, we've got our listeners a special discount code, and it's HUNTYS50.
That's HUNTYS50. You can use that for 50% off new arrival merchandise at 5x10.com.
Wait, 50% off new merch?
Facts, not fibs, boo. Though, anything at 5x10 is definitely worth full price. But with Hunties 50, this fabulous high-end underwear and athleisure is all yours at just half the cost.
And as a bonus, they look even better on the floor.
So get yourself some 5x10 and get out there and make a friend. 150, just for you. Mwah. Oh my God, is that Philip Brown of Oranet?
Oranet.
Salut, ça va? How are you?
Hello, bonjour, hello.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Je suis
welcome.
Couture.
Yeah. So good to see you again.
Thank you for having me. It's good to see you both too.
I know. So thank God we have the stylist here on a like double runway, basically. Because we have all the entrance looks, we have all of the looks from Drag Race UK, which is now finally back with us, thank God.
Yes.
But also we have you. Oh my God.
The real star is here.
I know. So how are you? How have you been? How are things in England? Tell us everything.
Things are okay in England, in the UK. Mm-hmm. We're unfortunately still dealing with Brexit and world collapsing around us. But
you just like change your mind about that, that would be great. Why did Brexit, I mean, I know why Brexit had to happen, but I'm like, could we just like not?
Conservative pendulum in the first world.
Yeah, she's been swinging. And but maybe she's going to swing back soon, hopefully.
Yeah, let's hope so.
But other than that, other than the collapse of society, pretty good. Just lots of sewing, being very lucky to be very busy and keeping things going.
As you should. You should always be busy because you are talent. Okay, so Brexit is still happening. How's your COVIDian journey?
Oh, COVIDian. Oh, that's a great word. It was okay. I did get COVID.
You got COVID?
How mild or severe was your case?
I was lucky. It was super, super mild because I'd already been double vaccinated.
So you had a breakthrough case of COVID. Yeah.
So it was just like a little sniffle for a day or two. And I was in isolation with my partner, which was kind of nice in a way. We kind of got like a little extended holiday.
Did you have lots of sex or are you like too sick?
Oh, he was so gross. He was like so sweaty. He was like he'd only had one jab, so he was kind of suffering a bit. But
oh, I see.
Yeah, we got through, and then other than that, we've survived. The cases are still a little bit up and down here, but not as bad as you guys. I think it's still kind of crazy over there, I believe. Mm-hmm.
So the thing about it is that most people up north have been vaccinated, and in cities have been vaccinated. So in the cities, you know, it's not as bad. But unfortunately for the middle of America, where people have been unvaccinated, they are at hospital capacity, and it is very bad. And, you know, it's just kind of messing up everything. So it's just really, really, it's kind of out of control. But within the cities, like, it's just, it's the same as it's been, if that makes any sense. So, like, we know that there are very high rates of COVID, like, in Mississippi or in Alaska or in West Virginia or something like that. And there are certain places that are, like, at capacity. But here in New York, it feels as if, like, nothing's changed over the past couple months. Like, people are just wearing masks now. But it hasn't changed. But it hasn't changed the way we've been operating. Like, all the queer spaces are like, show us your vaccination to get in.
But everyone here is vaccinated, so it's
So there, yeah. I had one friend that had a case of breakthrough COVID, but she recovered very quickly, and that's all it was. You know, it's just like she caught COVID and she was fine, but she was also vaccinated.
Get the vax. Everyone get the vax.
You gotta. Because these breakthrough cases are happening and it's the only way to stay out of the hospital.
It's so good. I mean, it's so good because it's like if the only COVID I want to have is vaccinated COVID. You know what I mean? And actually, there was a week where like I felt like a little like congestion in my chest and like blah, 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 but it like went away really quickly. So if I, you know, if Delta passed through me, you know, it wasn't that
keep on going. Deal.
Just briefly. Yeah. Just, a brief visit.
I just breezed on by.
Just rented it.
The last time we saw you, you were drawing lovely paintings of naked boys. You were making clothes for a fabulous drag queen on Drag Race. How have you been since?
Yeah, I've been really good. The naked boy drawing has been put to one side for now, unfortunately.
Oh, I know.
Leaning to one side, yeah.
I'm gonna send you a butt pic.
Oh yes. I need the content.
yeah.
But yeah, that's been put to one side because I've just been really busy with making clothes and designs, working with new queens. So I've had a lot of like good stuff, and then I had some really busy periods kind of like in February of this year. Getting ready for the episode that we are going to discuss.
Oh my god. And your piece was in Drag Race again.
And I had some
pieces,
plural. Yeah. I had some stuff for Drag Race Spain as well. A friend.
You were in Drag Race Spain?
Oh my god.
Well, yes and no.
Why did you not text me?
Well, a queen took my clothes to Drag Race Spain, but she didn't make it past the first episode.
Was it La Macarena? Oh, no.
It was Macarena, who was
She's so British.
Yeah, she was the queen that I first started working with when we both moved to Brighton. Like, we were super, super good friends. So I did three outfits for her. But baby went home in the first episode.
Has she worn them? Has she taken photos of them?
Yeah, she has. They're all on her Instagram.
I am the Macarena.
Everyone go and follow her. But
she's so funny. She's so cute. She's amazing. Like it was
great.
She gave such good like sidebar, and then they like kicked her off. And I was like, why did you kick off like the main character of the sidebar of the season?
Oh, yeah.
Like it just doesn't make any sense.
I was stunned. Her confessionals were so good. I was like, oh, she's gonna be a lot of fun this season.
And then when she came back for reunion, she was again a lot of fun.
That's the thing, like as much as I'm sad that we didn't get to see her the whole through, I'm like, she had 100% successful like episodes, which was a good thing to have. And she's so beautiful and so great, and she's killing it now. They're on tour, just lots of good things are going her way.
Okay, she did not tag you.
Well, we'll be having internet words. Etiquette.
Yes, we'll be having words with Miss Isaac.
Is that her name?
Yeah, Isaac, I would say is probably the correct pronunciation, but
Isaac that bitch.
Yeah, so I did her Le Veneno tribute, so the big purple shoulder piece thing.
Is this her?
Yes, that's one of the first dresses amazing. I made for her.
Oh my god.
That's so great. That's very cool.
Okay, she never looked this pretty. She never looked this pretty on the show. Oh, because she had to make her own dress. This is why.
Yeah, this is hours and hours of work, not running frantically around the Spanish workroom.
Okay, well, we found her, but I don't think she tagged you, which is making me really upset.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna have to message her and be like, what's happening here?
How did you do this too?
Look at that.
I only did the gloves for this one.
The
dress was made by a designer called Freak Couture, who's based more in Manchester.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, we are looking at Anubis's look for the promos of Drag Race UK.
Yeah, super talented, and they've done a lot for some of the season's queens. Mm-hmm. I think they did 3 promo looks.
That's a paycheck.
They did really well. But yeah, I made the little squiggly wiggly gloves.
Ooh. Love it.
So question, as England is opening up, have you been to any queer spaces?
Oh, have I? I was last in London a few months ago, I went to a show, which I cannot remember the name of the venue now. It's really cute though. It's like an old converted church hall, which is, I think, is fully being taken over as like a queer art space now. And there's a show on with lots of London queens, some Brighton queens.
Oh my god, what's it called?
Fun. I don't know. I can't remember now. But the host was Tiana Biscuit, Coco Couture.
Tiana Biscuit.
Coco Couture was there. Glue, the Queen, Teres Mangardi.
If I were a drag queen in England, I would be called Bubble and Squeak.
I like that. I've never met a Bubble and Squeak, actually. So you've got one.
And it would be Bubble and Squeak.
Bubble and Squeak. I love that.
Right?
Does that translate in the US? Is that what are grits? I still don't know what grits are.
Oh, grits?
I don't think any US person really knows what Bubble and Squeak is.
Oh, so there's an air of mystery you.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's like, we don't have an equivalent.
Oh, it doesn't translate. You're missing out. You're missing out, people.
And also, grits doesn't translate because, they just don't sell it.
So grits are a thing. So it's not, a recipe. It is a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to... You buy them as grits.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's it's kind of a southern breakfast food, but it can be just a side item. It can be savory. I think it's cornmeal with milk, essentially, but I could be totally wrong because I don't really eat grits too much. Grits is a porridge made from boiled cornmeal. Okay, I was right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Actually, you would just probably call it porridge.
So it's just really... Because with porridge, we sometimes eat it sweet.
We have grits sweet and savory, but the thing about grits is it's just grains prepared in kind of like a soup. So it's like, but the soup is very thick.
Okay,
if that makes any sense.
I just never really
understand.
Like if oatmeal
were a soup, almost kind of similar.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. If you took the oats, if you took the oats and you put them through in a blender, that's
and
what
the oats were corn.
Like. Yeah. yeah. It's a corn oatmeal. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cornmeal. Okay.
Yeah. And Nick, do you know what Bubble and Squeak is?
No idea. Sounds probably British, contextually.
Yeah, it's basically like yesterday's leftovers that you then refry with a lot of oil and kind of mush it all together. Yeah. There might be potato, onions, potatoes, carrots,
meat. A little butter.
Okay.
Brussels sprouts. Bubble and Squeak. Potato. And Squeak. It's basically like... You That'd take whatever you have and you put it in a pan and then you add an egg maybe sometimes.
Yeah, if you're feeling fancy.
Cute.
There's actually a really beautiful, what's it called? There's a really beautiful queer movie that's in a council estate, and it's two guys falling in love, and then one of them sings a bunch of songs by one of the women from the Mamas and the Papas, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the movie
it's
is
so good.
Oh, I can't remember, but yeah, it's like it's very like quintessential working class.
Yeah, like it's a working mom, class love story.
Yeah, and like the mom is like quite a famous actress here, but she's known for being very like playing working class kind of like slightly rough around the edges women. And she's fabulous. She has like what's really severe haircut. Oh, what is it called? I need to obviously step up my queer movie history here.
This is queer knowledge. Okay, it's fine. But that being said, we will watch that movie once upon a time, maybe for the 100th episode of Whispering Hunties, because it is such a beautiful, beautiful love story. Basically, like, you know, obviously one of them is more gay than the other, but they end up falling in love. And at the end of it, I think they go to like a gay bar together or something like that. But I mean, honestly, like most British queer movies are like the best queer movies. Do you know what I mean? Like over the years, there've been so many, and it's just, they just do it better than other people. And Sex Education is now back out. So everyone dive into that. let's just start with Drag Race UK, because I can't even with Holland right now. Like it's just out of control. But Nick.
Yeah.
Could you just remind me of what happened on Drag Race UK? I'm a little confused.
Oh, you know I can.
It was a rough night. Could we maybe get like a little whole story report or something like that?
Oh, sure thing. Pip, pip, cheerio, and welcome to the premiere of Drag Race UK Series 3, babes. We're back with all new queens. Well, not completely, but we'd love to see the return of Veronica Green, who got COVID and couldn't finish season 2. She's joined by Kitty Scott-Claus, River Medway, Scarlet Harlot, Vanity Milan, Ella Vidae, Theresa May, who had the best entrance line, Victoria Scon, who had the second best entrance line, Electra Fence, Anubis, Crystal Versace, and Charity Case. Still with us? We start off running with a game of dirty charades, which had vibes a bit like what you do on the first day of an improv class to get to know each other. RuPaul reveals the first main challenge, a two-look runway. The first category is hometown pride, and the second is inspired by something each queen loves. My fave hometown pride looks were coincidentally all the plant-themed ones from Victoria Scon, Crystal Versace, and Charity Case. My fave favorite things looks were from Victoria and Crystal once again, Scarlet Harlot, Electra Fence, and Theresa May. In a new level of goopery, Rue announces that the top two queens will lip-sync for the win and bottom two will lip-sync for their lives. Holy music royalties, Batman! Victoria and Crystal are the top two who perform to total eclipse of the heart. Crystal wins the first Rupeter badge. Now it's up to the bottom two, Anubis and Electra, to lip-sync to Sweet Melody. Electra is victorious and Anubis is officially the first queen to be eliminated from season 3. 11 queens remain. I'm going to see if River Medway needs any help untucking. And that's the whole story.
Oh, wow. Nick has a little crush.
Well, we love an Asian twink, don't we?
Yeah, said by you. So we do have to get straight to it. Anubis was wearing a Renette.
It was.
Absolutely. And darn the luck, first eliminated girl again.
Honestly, it's like, it's not the curse of Brighton, it's the curse of O'Renette. Like, don't
these queens catch wise, they're not going to work with you anymore.
Yeah, don't book me for Drag Race. Like,
but you didn't have the first out queen last time.
No, I didn't. But yeah. This time I've made up for it.
Okay, so did you the deconstructed Egyptian flag look.
Every look on Anubis this episode was little old me.
Amazing.
So tell us, how did you meet? I do like how you did Brighton well with the, you actually did the pavilion on her body, which I thought looked great.
Yeah, like Anubis, I've worked with Anubis previously and before she was even cast on Drag Race. Obviously I lived in Brighton for a few years. That's where I started my career.
Yeah.
Which sounds very official. Stop.
So this is when Anubis was like 16, because she's 19.
Yeah,
she's,
right. Oh my
she's
god.
So young. So yeah. young.
Offensively young.
She's very thick for a 19-year-old.
Thick?
You don't, she's 19-year-olds
can be any size, but she is a very tall person. Like
she's
a
tall
big stage
person
presence.
For like
yeah, she's super tall. She's yeah. super tall, like super bubbly, really like
yeah.
so talented, like she can do everything, and it's sad that we didn't get to see her sing. Oh, no. She can sing. But yeah,
this is
she
a very
she,
Joe Black moment.
God, poor little Joe. Yeah, curse of Brighton. But yeah, she we've worked together previously. I think she got in touch with me through kind of another queen, you know, as it goes with drag queens, it's all yeah, kind of yeah. word of mouth. So we've done a few little looks. She's got a really like I think the greatest thing about Anubis is that she knows what she likes, she knows what she's good at, mm-hmm. she sticks to her vision, like she doesn't compromise her vision. So she loves that kind of really campy old school aesthetic, which is nice to see on a, you know what I mean? Someone who's was 19 when they were on the show. She's 20 now. So happy right. birthday, Anubis.
I feel like so many young queens, yeah, they go for like body queen or look, makeup only, because they're pretty much into the exposure of Drag Race, and that's what inspired them. But it is really cool, yeah, like you said, to see a young person go the campy route. Like
what
such
do they
a
call,
traditional
what do they
drag
call these drag queens that have like been like born during Rue. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby queens. And yeah. I think with those kind of children of Drag Race, you can sometimes see the influences, which is interesting, but also it's an interesting point.
I think sometimes the mistake that a lot of the young queens make is they're inspired by drag queens rather than by like popular culture.
Their own interests. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like if you're dragging drag queens, you need to get back to the source material, basically.
Yeah, and just mix it up as well. I think you know what I mean. We all watch this show, so we all see the references that they're referencing.
Like, I want to get some like EastEnders, Hollyoaks. You know, some. I would love for someone to come in an Austin look. You know, like I would. There's so many different British references, and all I see is like high fashion. And, you know, or like James Bond.
I know Bag of Chips did kind of an odd job James Bond reference
yeah,
in the first season.
I think Kitty Scott Claus's look is kind of like 1960s pinup. So her entrance look. So I guess we did get a little bit of that. And then also, what's her face? Oh my God, I have such a crush on this queen. Elle of a Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's super hot.
Elle of a Day is just out of track. It's just scrumptiously diddly umptious.
Also, like, one of the best names of the season.
Have it an Elle of a Day.
Elle of a Day. Elle of a Day. That's so good.
Yeah. Also, can we talk about this hate crime of like RuPaul's promo look for England is phenomenal. RuPaul's look on the show, not so much. I love Zaldi. I think Zaldi looks amazing. Whenever Zaldi's on the show, but I want to fire Zaldi. I want RuPaul to look better. Like Fred is running circles around RuPaul.
I like the purple dress. I thought, but yeah, actually no. When you then compare it to perhaps the golden age of Drag Race, it's kind of a bit of a
yeah. It doesn't
compare. Lackluster.
I also have a crush on this this British. I mean, everyone's British, but sorry, the town estate drag queen, Scarlet Harlot.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
the
yeah.
Cockney drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
Completely.
She's so funny and like out of drag is just like hilarious. Her accent is so strong.
That is a proper East London accent. Yeah. And that was quite alien to me, being from the tip top of the north.
She's also always like yelling. She has the tone of voice in her confessionals. It's like, "All right, Papa, I'm looking at RuPaul right in front of me. I can't believe it." And it's like, all right, you have to yell.
And the funniest thing is, like, you know, I've only ever really like hung out really in like East London because my godmother's from Tottenham Hale. and she's Jamaican. So I've only ever hung out with like Jamaican, like East London, like, you know, British people. So I should be like right within my element, but like I normally hang out with the black people there and not the white people. So like it still hits me like a truck. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
It's just the luck. Like she doesn't seem to breathe when she's talking. Like, yeah. Like the longer sentences. It's adorable. Like absolutely adorable. But yeah, I'm like, take a breath. just let it out.
You know, the next time I go to England to visit my godmother, I will do a lot of inspecting of East London and all of its boys, and hopefully have them. Now, that being said, okay, so we have all of these entrance looks, and we can't go through, we have three looks throughout the whole thing, so we just need to talk about the standouts. I do think that Veronica Green looked good when she walked in, but I do have to say that even though she's back, I feel like I'm a little underwhelmed.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, because it's like it's a pretty massive opportunity to like get to come back to the show right after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like you know that you're going to be there.
Yeah.
So it's an opportunity to be like, okay, that old Veronica, she's dead.
Yeah.
let's really amp it up. But yeah, the entrance look, it was like, fun. I'm glad she did like a full green thing, but then the runways were pretty underwhelming, and I was like,
I've just been underwhelmed the whole time, because she's like, oh, I'm a little nervous that like blah blah blah, and I'm like, the reason why people underestimated you is because in the workroom you don't show your personality,
right?
So what you should do the second time around is show your personality and don't do it on stage because, you know, drag queens are like wolves, right? They sniff fear out and they literally will just like make fun of it, blah, blah, blah.
So if you're looking feral.
Yeah, exactly. No, but so if you're looking to feel scared, they will make you feel scared. If you look to them for validation, they will not give you the validation because it's a competition.
And she's the only one who's been there before. It's everyone else's first time on TV doing this.
Let's compare Veronica's entrance look to Victoria Scone. Victoria Scone walked in ready to like work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, she killed it.
She is bringing it.
I love her accent. It's very posh. and not like 100% posh, but it's like more posh than the other girls on it, on the show. And she just sounds like so smart and witty. And she's just like, I don't give a, you know, I don't care that any of these people have penises. Like, I'm the most fabulous drag queen in the room. And that's the energy that I want when I watch my Drag Race. Like, I want to just feel like I'm in your hands and you're just going to do me right. You know?
And it's great to see that, like, there's no way that it's like she's going to get credit or bonus points for being AFAB, an AFAB queen. Because she proved that she is bringing it with her drag, regardless of any other aspect.
Yeah.
You know, because I know like some people on season 13 were raising the very transphobic sentiment of, oh, Gottmik is doing well because Gottmik is trans.
Oh, really?
Like, said no, Gottmik is a great drag queen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was super clever of Victoria to come in with wearing something so high drag and so classic British drag as well. Like the references, it was very like Paul O'Grady. It was like drag. And I think that made an even bigger statement, because she was just like, I think instantly dispelled anyone that would say like, oh, is she really doing drag? Like, that's drag. She's doing drag.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, great to see. I think it was a very clever decision.
And then we have, I mean, this angel, Crystal Versace. Oh my God. Like this.
Yeah.
That's a drag queen. Like,
also stunning.
Like, and here's the thing, like, you know, the point of being a drag queen is not always to look like a hot vixen, but I have to say that I'm getting like Bimley Bon Boulash vibes from Crystal Versace. She has that, like,
see that?
That like London fashion, like, you know, just there's aesthetics here that the other queens don't have.
Yeah, she does have that kind of like 90s supermodel, like she's like the sexy one. You know what I mean? Like, as she said, yeah, she invented tits. Like, so just, yeah, like, I mean, her drag is perfect.
Also, she stole Raven's face. This is Raven's makeup. Like, she has that. Raven has this way of doing a glow right over your eyes and your cheeks, and it's like centered on your face.
Yeah.
And that is what Crystal Versace does on her face. And it looks so good. It's that Raven envy glow. And not everyone can do that. So I do think that her makeup is phenomenal. Obviously she had plastic surgery, but like the makeup is phenomenal. And then the aesthetics with the clothes like really match it. And so,
yeah. Good sense of self for sure.
Yeah. So we get on the show and the pit crew is making Rupita badges because apparently there's still no prize, which is disgusting.
It's probably COVID filming still back then. Dang it. I need the Brit crew.
I know, the Brit crew is so sexy.
Yeah.
Snacks. But that being said, we also have River Medway. Who actually, I have like a huge crush on River Medway. Not because they're an Asian twink.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Just because like, I think the accent's cute. I think the face is cute. I think mm-hmm. the whole like sidebar is cute. Like River Medway is a snack. And like, I did like the first outfit. I like the entrance look. I like the first look with the pointing. And I wasn't that upset by the musical look.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to be like in the bottom three for her. Yeah. I thought she did a little better than that. And I love her confessionals. So I don't know. It is what it is. Maybe next week this will have gotten to her and she'll really be stunning or something. I don't know. But at least she was not in the bottom two.
Well, she has way more personality than everyone else. So like, you know, I think the personality queens were really like Anubis or Medway, and then this other one who Charity Case, who actually I had heard of before Drag Race.
Yeah. Yeah, she's big.
I mean, talk about like out of this world drag. Do you know what I mean? Like, just like, you know, no one's bringing this. It's like Sharon Needles and Jinx Monsoon had a baby
that got put in a blender.
Yeah, and also I feel like Charity Case is like a Dragula, would be great on Dragula, almost. Right. Like, this is almost like the wrong TV show.
Right. There are those vibes. But I'm glad. I love to see it. I like when there is something that is representative of a totally different flavor of drag. Because especially in the Hometown Pride ones, you're seeing a lot of, and especially because there's so many young queens on this season, a lot of it looks like a little cookie cutter drag, like what you expect to see.
Yeah.
A lot of similar fabrics, similar shapes, similar stories in the garments, I think. So yeah. I love any influence that we can have that is super creative out of the box, like Charity Case. Yeah. I think it brings something better. It heightens the average.
I mean, honestly, like Nick, this is your drag queen.
Charity?
Yeah.
I'm into it. I'm very into it. And I'm definitely sure she's going to go far. But Victoria Scone is my favorite. Is my number one right now. Oh, Victoria Scone for the win at this point for me. She's my favorite.
Really? But look at this drag. Also, look at this. Look at this boy drag. Snacks. Charity Case is an innovator.
Charity's probably third for me.
Third?
Yeah. Or second. Second or third.
Okay, so it's the first episode, we really do know nothing. We don't know how everyone's going to go.
True.
But who's everyone's top three?
Ooh, I think Crystal Versace is just going to kill it. I think she just got it in her. Like, she's just good at, you know what I mean? I think it's like
good at drag, yeah.
You can be great at drag, but you can be great at Drag Race, and they don't always overlap. But I think she's just good at both.
Is she like, also 19?
Built for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a baby as well.
She's in that Venn diagram. But I mean, especially to be that fresh at it and that good, that's like even better than Vivaldi, who we'll talk about.
Okay, so that's your number one?
Yes. I think Victoria Scone is gonna kill it as well. Yep. Like absolutely gonna smash it. And I think I don't want to say wild card because that's a bit disrespectful, but I think it either could go River Medway or Kitty Scott Claus, because I think they are that archetype of like maybe slightly rough around the edges, like they are the charisma queens. Like yeah. Kitty Scott Claus is hilarious. Like
super fun.
She's a so proper funny. British hun as well. Like she is British. Like she is Britain.
What's a hun? Educate us.
Oh, like a hun is, I don't, that's the thing. I think it's like grits. I don't think it fully translates, but like a hun is generally like a girl kind of in her 20s, but you could go all the way up to the 40s, kind of like generally working class, a little bit, just a bit like, you're right, like really, really right. Friendly. She's the type of girl that you'd meet on a night out and you'd end up doing shots with her, and then she might cry about her like awful boyfriend, and then you'd dance. And then you'd go and get chips on the way home. Like she's just like proper hun.
Yeah.
Are Taste in a Horror huns? Taste in a Horror sound like huns.
Yeah.
I would
Taste for sure.
Yeah, I would say Taste is more of a hun than a horror. Just because I think a horror's got that kind of slightly like
aloof.
Model, aloof kind of vibe, but Taste is literally like, you know what I mean? She just
like salt of the earth.
Beans.
That's what
beans on toast. Yeah.
So a hun is salt of the earth. For
salt
sure.
of the earth. Yeah. Salt of the earth, proper hun.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, my tops just like walking in were definitely Kitty Saw Claus, and then also the one that you mentioned. No one said Elle of a Day. I think Elle of a Day is definitely up there. And then I think the third one would probably be, maybe it's just everyone that I want to sleep with, Scarlet Harlot, and then but tied with Victoria Scone. So maybe I have a top four right now. That's my top four.
Gotcha.
I can't really pick between them because I don't think we've seen enough.
For sure. But yeah, I know. I have to keep running myself because
like Victoria
episode.
Killed it until the lip sync. And then I was like, what are you going to do when you run out of sandwiches? And then you ran out of sandwiches and there was nothing.
I think my top three right now in this order are Victoria Scone, Crystal Versace, and then Charity Kiss.
Sorry, I didn't mention Crystal. Because I'm just wondering if we're going to run into that situation where, like, she's a great drag queen in terms of aesthetics, but she has nothing, like, underneath that because she's 19 years old.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this episode was all looks and runway. Like, that's it. This is not anything like a song challenge, an acting challenge. I mean, those can be wild results.
I also think it's weird that like apparently Victoria Scone is like the most experienced drag queen on the show at this moment in time.
She said about 3 years.
She said 5 years.
It is a young cast though, like a lot
it's
of
a
queens
very
that are
very
young.
A lot
20s.
Of freshness. Yeah.
So I'm like, have y'all just literally been doing drag for 2 years and now you're on Drag Race? This show is like 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Babies. Everyone's a baby.
I mean, like, you know, baby queens are wonderful queens, but like on Drag Race?
Yeah, I wonder if it's like some kind of choice of the show to be like, we are trying to skew younger right now or something. I don't know.
They always
love
this the
third season of British Queens. I mean, this is like getting over 30 British Queens now who've been on the show. So
I know, but I want the older queens. I want the queens have been through it. I want the queens. I want a Tabitha on this
such
show.
Such a necessary perspective.
You know what I mean? I want someone to tell me like what was it like doing drag in like the 2000s. You know, and I want 20 years of like a career, you know, doing pantomimes and going on tour and like blah, blah, blah. You know, I want to hear that history and I feel like we're not going to get it this year.
Yeah, I'm craving that as well. Like, cause that's the drag that I was kind of brought up with in a sense. Mm. You know, like it is again, that very like working class rough, like, you know, a queen just stands in a bar, tells really like awful dirty jokes, drinks, like says something, swans around in a dress that doesn't necessarily fit that well, but like that is drag to me.
Totally.
Anyway,
also, like, I mean, obviously this is not Ireland, and Ireland is its own country, but like I want like a panty bliss on this show. Do you know what I mean? Like I want like someone who like was doing drag in like the
90s. Really been around. Who could show us. Yeah. And that's the thing, like that performance aspect of that, like becoming a really well-rounded performer comes with time. And so it feels like maybe they're making these choices, at least for this season, of like, oh, let's get some bright, young, fresh faces for TV drag.
Yeah.
Rather than like, let's get the most well-rounded historic like drag experience for this show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I think they came under fire a little bit for being kind of less diverse than normal.
Right, but I don't know if there's only one black person and there's one Asian person.
Black person, one Asian person. I mean, it's great that there's an AFAB queen. And I think Charity is non-conforming or non-binary. And I don't recall if there's another. So it's like a little bit, I mean, in some of the other international seasons that we've had this year have had like remarkable amounts of diversity. And some of them have totally not, like Under.
What was it? There were like 5 non-binary people. There were like 5 genderqueer people on Drag Race España.
On España, yeah. So, yeah. Which is like, oh, that's sick. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's about the drag, of course, but we'll see. Because when you lack perspectives and like already we're seeing like a lack of an age perspective, it makes me curious as to how it's going to unfold the rest of the season.
The one thing I am very happy about is that there's a lot of personality on this season. Like, these queens have personality. So I don't think we're going to like be left wanting in terms of like confessionals and conversation. I mean, this little pocket gay, Electra Fence.
I know, so tiny.
Is hilarious. And yeah. Nick will sleep with Electra one day.
Yes. God willing, when these COVID flights are allowed to happen to international waters, yeah, you better believe it.
Yeah, I'm still looking for my tall snack. okay, so that was you know, Drag Race UK. We love you. We've been waiting for you, and we're rooting for you. And hopefully, the diversity that is clearly not apparent from the first episode will make itself very apparent.
Right. Right. I mean, still we'll fun first episode. The lip sync twist is cool, I guess. I mean, there are going to be two.
I love the double lip sync. I want more lip syncs. You know,
that's fine.
Lip sync for your life, lip sync for the crowd. Right. Like,
I mean, drag queens lip sync for a living.
Yeah.
And then on the show that's about drag, it treats it as a punishment.
Yeah.
So it's nice. Yeah. It's nice when it's a little bit of like All-Stars flavor to be like, no, it's lip sync as a winner and lip sync to save yourself. So it. More lip syncing is good.
I also think it's good to have the winner's lip sync because you want the winner to be good at doing like what drag queens do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And they're in a good headspace of being excited to win. So.
No. But like, you know how like sometimes like people will sometimes win without ever lip syncing. So you don't get to see their artistry.
Yeah.
True.
I do think it's good to have the winner's lip sync because it shows like this is why they won, you know?
Right, yeah,
you got to try before you buy as well. Yeah. Like, no one wants to go on a tour that you've never seen that queen
across the stage. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we touched on it because I think it's a great change that I wouldn't mind seeing.
Oh, I'm
continue
100%. I'm into it.
And this episode did make me very excited to see more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so as a person that loves me a British accent, I'm super, super happy that we are finally back in my element. I speak all derivations of the British regional... English.
hey, at least we have diversity in like regional accents for the UK.
Well, as a British person, I'm gonna say there is so many Southern queens this season.
Oh, okay, I agree.
Got it.
No, there are very few Northerners, and it actually is very palpable. Because no one really has that like Liverpool, you know, kind of accent. No one really
has.
So
we're lacking diversity in that category too.
Everyone's from London. Like,
and even the queens that are from sort of, I know Veronica and I think Charity are both from Lancashire, but I know Charity's London based.
Yeah.
So you don't kind of perhaps get a lot of that Lancashire kind of vibe. And obviously Charisa's from Newcastle, so she's singing, and I'm so happy to see that. But it's like, one queen from the north in the whole season, like
the north, yeah. you know nothing, Jon Snow. No, but I mean, we're really like starved for both Scottish queens.
Yeah, no Scottish queens.
Welsh queens.
Yeah, I mean, there's only Victoria Scone is Welsh, or at least based in Cardiff, I think.
Yeah, but you can tell from her accent. But like, we don't really have like the, we don't have the West. We don't Southeast. Have the North. We just have the South. And so, yeah, the Southeast yeah. and then East within the Southeast, because everyone's from East London. So, I mean, it's just like, I was like, oh, so you're all from the same place. Great.
But maybe that was a conscious decision, because maybe that's gonna cause some tensions if everyone's mm-hmm. kind of wants to be the real queen of the Southeast.
Right.
I know, but so my favorite accents are like Northern yeah. or like Classy. Welsh. So I'm really being starved.
Yeah. I love the Cockney or the better.
Okay. No, I don't actually like Cockney. I think I much prefer.
It was relatable to me as a poor.
Well, no, because like that's all that like Americans can do. They can do posh and they can do Cockney.
But right.
There's True. So much more, you know.
Yeah, there's a whole country. Yeah.
Philip's like, no, like literally, like we're a whole, yeah. like we're yeah, more than London.
We're starving up here. Like, please come to the north. Like nothing is here.
North. Yes.
We'll come to the north.
Well, God damn it. I can't wait to go to Europe for the first time. We're going to meet all these queens. We're going to meet you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to show you the sights.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Give you some like good old, like northeastern cooking. Like you'll go home like with a coronary heart attack because it's just all fried bread, chips, oh. cheese.
Are you trying to make us gain weight? Like I'm confused.
But... yeah, I'll move there. I'll vote that stuff. I hate this.
No, I mean, but like, you know, Philip is very lithe, so I'm really offended that he's trying to make us fat because you know.
It's all corsetry. That's why.
Eat whatever you want if you got a corset.
Nick.
Oh.
I know it's the last episode, but you know, I get so fuzzy in my memory. Do you have maybe like a whole story report or something about
this? Oh, I sure do. Hello and welcome back for the last time to Drag Race Holland Season 2, wherein we crown a new drag superstar. We start off reunion style with our eliminated queens all the way from Juicy Couture to Kata Minaj. Our top three queens have another adorable workroom entrance, but will it be My Little Pony, Vanessa Van Cartier, or Vivaldi in the end? We'll find out after today's main event, a music video and verse writing challenge with some Dutch model, singer, and YouTuber, Famke Louise. Before choreo, the dolls participate in a podcast interview with Fred and Cosmopolitan Netherlands editor-in-chief Josephine Kay. I love hearing from every queen, but my fave interview is Vanessa, who hits me right in the feels again. On the runway, category is Finale Extravaganza. My fave look goes to Vanessa Van Cartier because, hello, I'm not blind. That was a mind-blowing and jaw-dropping vision of gold glamour excellence. And what can I say about the music video? It was strange and short, yet sexy and cinematic, and honestly felt a bit out of place in the episode. I liked Vanessa and Pony's verses, but definitely wasn't feeling Vivaldi's. Side story, I love the idea of having the reigning queen on the judging panel of the unforgettable, subsequent finale, and not just because Envy Peru is a goddess. We see another unforgettable face, season one Miss Congeniality, Mama Queen. She reveals the queen's vote for this season's Miss Congeniality, Tabita. Congratulations. And now, the actual finale. Fred reveals that it is not yet Vivaldi's time, and she comes in at a solid third place. I can't lie, I was relieved. Hello, Phonegate. Vanessa and Pony say nice things before lip-syncing for the crown, and what a stunning show. But it still feels obvious because the use of glitter tits will always come out on top. And the Drag Race Holland crown goes to Vanessa Van Cartier! Except there's no crown. But she still wins. It was a stunning season of Dutch and Belgian excellence. I can't wait for season three, and that's the whole story.
Wow.
Here we go. Glitter tits for the win.
Glitter tits. Okay. So, because we have a fashionista with us today, I thought it'd be really fun if we did a little reading of the runway.
Oh.
All right. So here we go.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Juicy Couture. When I wrote It's Juicy Couture all the way to Kata Minaj, I was like, how are those two that close together in even a sentence? Because,
okay,
no t-shirt, no tea, no shade, no pink lemonade, but Juicy Couture, honey, what is this look?
Okay, yeah. So Juicy Couture decided to wear foil. Like, I was like, what is this foil dress? Also, Reggae
Ain't no
B.
No filter going to fix that.
Also, that was also terrible. Love My Cece finally wore the foam, whatever. Right. Ivy wore a blazer. Mm-hmm. This is Scarlett's look from Drag Race Down Under.
Literally.
Yeah. Tabitha wore pop art. And then what is Kate Minaj wearing?
Bitch.
No, but literally, so Kate Minaj just decided to wear, like, the two looks in one outfit.
Right. I for Kata, and I love Kata and wish she should have been in the finale instead of Vivaldi, but I love that she does black and white a lot, but that felt like, I've seen more, and if that was her finale look,
It was very underwhelming, and then it made me feel like I wasn't that upset to see her go. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Like, Kate Minaj should have walked in the most expensive thing money could buy.
Made Fred regret.
She should have looked better than Envy Peru. Right. But she didn't. Because Envy Peru looked like Envy Peru. And reminded us why she was crowned.
Yeah, no one can do better.
The bitch inside of the thing.
Like, I was just like, I was like, Kata, like, what happened?
And when Fred said to her, she was saying, like, well, yeah, I was sad to go. And Fred was like, well, you didn't make it, so.
Thanks, Fred.
Well,
Fred,
no,
I do can think be very blunt.
Yeah, I do think it's kind of cute that they did, like, kind of the reunion episode on the episode. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, I didn't mind that. I almost wanted more of it, though.
Yeah, they could have interviewed them more. I mean, it was just like a one-liner. Mm-hmm. Also, Fred did not look good this episode. I thought that outfit was disgusting. Like, I was like, you look fat, which you're not.
Weird proportions.
It didn't smack of finale eleganza.
Well, the thing was, is it looked better from the side. Like, it made Fred look large, but from the side, he looked really skinny. So I was like, why is your outfit better when you turn than when I look at it dead on?
Yeah, it had like a very broad illusion.
I mean, it had no waist because the waist was incredibly wide. And then it had the widest hips. And then those stupid feathers. Like, what? I mean, the feathers looked like someone had hurt them. You know, like, someone got mad at the feathers and, like, smacked them up and then put them on the dress. And it just, like, I was like, please, no hate crimes on the clothing. And the sad part is that, you know, an episode or two before, I mean, Fred looked like a goddess. You know, and it's not that hard because he has super broad shoulders. So it's like, just make his waist small.
Yeah.
I think just a bit, yeah, like, that's the thing. I think with the finale runways, I think the word is just like, yeah, like I was whelmed. I think like the run through, it was just a bit like, okay, like
whelmed.
Completely whelmed.
Well, you, as opposed to being overwhelmed, you were
or
whelmed.
Under.
Just whelmed. Whelmed. Just
yeah,
whelmed.
I love that. Like,
I wasn't upset. I wasn't mad, but I wasn't engaged.
I was not living for this. I mean, Canada's redemption runway was better than this. A redemption runway is where you wear your best drag. Mm. You're telling me that Juicy Couture's best drag was foil?
That's the thing. If it's your last chance to wear something, like, go crazy. I'd always rather someone made an impact trying to go too big than just did something we've seen before or a bit too safe.
Oh, like, this is something I can wear. No, you can tell no CC real, like, basic. Big thought went into it. There was no concept. Yeah.
Even Love My Cece in that blow up situation looked okay. You
know, mm-hmm. Like, oh, and even without the foam claw piece, which nobody does shit like that. So I loved having Love My Cece around, who like was bold enough to use big pieces like that.
Yeah.
But she wasn't on the show as long as she deserved to be.
Yeah.
But without the padded claw thing, she still like looked really cool in just the interview chair with like the wig. I just thought she looked really neat and kind of badass.
I do like that she explained. She's like, I had glued that wig to my face. So
the whole like gremlin mask. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, she's like, I couldn't take it off. I can just like rip it off.
I think they were still too hard on her for that. It still looked good and she could lip sync better than Ivy did. So,
well, I mean, sometimes you have a double standard when you're the black performer because like, you know, you're like, oh my God, why aren't you giving us life? Why aren't you giving us like blah, blah, blah? And it's like, sometimes I'm quiet.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, the black person
I can't
is not
match your energy constantly. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's like sometimes I'm okay, and that's okay. because a lot of white queens are just okay. And guess what? They get to stick around, Countess.
Yeah, that. I mean, and that's the thing. Countess always like looks beautiful, but I mean, very uninspired some of the time. Like they read her for that. It was like, well, this, of course you look nice, but I'm not really getting like a story, a narrative. Like when she did the makeover challenge, it was like, well, yeah, you look pretty, but I'm not getting really the concept we asked for.
I'm telling you, Black on the Runway is kryptonite. Because it's a dark room. And you just have a couple spotlights. Mm-hmm. So if that outfit is not gorgeous,
you can get swallowed
it doesn't
up.
Read.
Right. You know swallowed what I mean? Up. It's yeah. not going to be the impact.
Bright colors on the runway. It's like actually a thing. Like the brighter the color, the better that it pops because it's a dark room. Mm-hmm. So if you choose to wear black, good luck.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And like when it has in doubt, to wear entirely gold. And shave your head.
Oh my God.
Because that's the key to success, baby.
Okay.
Gasp, jaw drop. Okay.
Let's talk about the final runway. Mm-hmm. Vivaldi's outfit, Dolly inspired.
I loved that. I loved it.
Oh, you did?
I loved the fabrication. I loved the shape. I loved that big kind of spike coming out of the side mm-hmm. almost on the hip. It was so beautiful, and I just it kind of reminded me, obviously, with the art inspiration, but of Ugacio from
so yeah, just Ugacio, that, like, it was beautiful. Ugacio Crujente, and then a little bit of Gottmik, which was kind of funny because I don't think that Gottmik was like a big thing when this happened.
Mm.
So it's interesting that like it was like Gottmik's face.
Mm. Yeah. It was very Vivaldi, but it was Vivaldi finale. Like it was, I could tell that it was her at her like kind of peak. Artistic, very funky,
I actually think the wig was my favorite part of the outfit.
Oh yeah.
I do kind of feel like her outfit in the previous week would have been better on this runway because it was even more color.
Mm-hmm. Which then means more quintessentially Vivaldi, I guess.
I just kind of feel like I was a little bit underwhelmed because I've seen Vivaldi in like these out of this world things. So it didn't feel as out of this world as Vivaldi typically is.
Mm-hmm.
But I also do want to talk about the interview portion because I think this is really where Vanessa won the competition. During the interview segment of this episode, Vanessa was so present and so real in front of that editor of Cosmo. And it was actually really funny because Vivaldi's interview was the most strange thing. And I quote, he's like the most important thing for me to be is to show people like Vivaldi. And then the editor says, okay, so like who's Vivaldi? And he's like, Vivaldi's everything. And I was like, that's not a personality. You can't that's be everything.
Answer. Right. That is a young queen saying, I'm that bitch. I'm everything and I'm stunning. I'll give it to you. Also, every episode.
Also, yeah. I will also say that we've spoken to some Dutch queens, and literally they said that like none of the queens on this show have been wearing boobs like in their typical drag. And then one of the things that Vivaldi said is like, I can be anything, I can be minimalist, I can wear tits, blah blah blah. And I was like, that's not drag that you do on the regular. So congratulations
and
discovering tits on Drag Race. It's not an innovative thing.
And that's not what they mean when they say, so who is Vivaldi? And he's like, well, she wears tits sometimes. And it's like, well, that's not who you are. You know.
No, and then like, what are you going to do with the crown? I'm going to Vivaldify the world. You didn't articulate what Vivaldi was, and you're going to Vivaldify the world. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And the first two lyrics of her verse were, ooh, yeah, it's Vivaldi. Yeah, Vivaldi.
Not the names. It's always the names. I'm this person. I do this.
It was as bad as the España verses, baby.
That was a better verse than Vivaldi's verse. Congratulations, Philip.
Winner.
I just want to say that Vivaldi's verse was Roxy Andrews part de.
Oh.
it was a lot of moaning and filling space because there was literally nothing happening. And then Vivaldi mentioned Vivaldi's tits. while not wearing tits.
Yeah.
Did you catch that? Like, Vivaldi's on the piano in a Middle Miss outfit, which Vivaldi has not done all season. When Vivaldi said that Vivaldi can be minimalist, I was like, that's a lie, because everything that Vivaldi does is over the top. And then also, to sing about wearing tits while not wearing tits was...
a choice.
Maybe that's Vivaldi. That's who Vivaldi is.
She keeps you guessing.
Yeah, she brings phones.
I was so confused. And I loved, actually, I think Vanessa really did have the best verse, because she's like, she talked about like calling Vivaldi, but like, you know, she mentioned a phone without like talking about a phone, so but it was like still shady. And I was like, that's that bitch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, her outfit was terrible. It was just like a, you know, shimmy dress, but
right.
She had the best verse, because Pooni mm-hmm. was just like, oh, also, worst drag lyrics ever from Pooni. It's like, what did Pooni say? It was so basic. It was so basic.
Yeah.
What did he say?
I don't even remember. And that's a
she
problem.
Literally said, she's like, I came to slay. And I was like, boo.
Well, we all did. Yeah. We all came to slay.
Boo.
You don't
boo.
Have to tell us that.
Boo. If you need to tell me that you came to slay,
you ain't slaying.
It's just because you're trying to rhyme it with gay or say or today or that's why, like, people say I came to slay, so they can rhyme it easily.
If you have to tell me, I think something's wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, Pooni was like, I came to slay, and I was like, well, you slayed in like the first episode.
Yeah.
But like, since then, it's just kind of been the problem with Pooni's narrative is that it's all about Kata.
Oh,
did
true,
you get that
true.
Feeling this episode? All Pooni could talk about was Kata Minaj.
Yeah.
And her verse was about Kata Minaj. Her interview was about Kata Minaj. I was like, stop being the supporting character in your own freaking narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Talk about Pooni. So Pooni's narrative is Pooni has a famous father. Pooni's dad did not survive alcoholism. Pooni is Kata Minaj's ex-boyfriend. Pooni is always the other person in the narrative, and you can't win Drag Race with that. And also, I think they really didn't want Pooni to win, because all they talked about on this episode was that Pooni had just started drag. And this was not a part of the conversation for the whole series. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the final episode, they're like, oh, so you just started 2 years ago. Well, I'm so glad
right.
you knew this
one. When that's the topic, you can kind of track it.
Yeah.
You can like clock it playing out for
yeah.
sure.
And so they're like, I'm not sure if, like, you know, it's going to be for the long haul. So actually, I'm going to let you know my little theory, because I think that this was all a conspiracy. So I think that they hired Vanessa being like, Vanessa just won Miss Continental and we can have our first trans winner. She deserves it. She's great. She's talent, whatever. But then they didn't expect Kata Minaj to be so good. And when they finally had a chance to put Kata Minaj in the bottom, they put her in the bottom. And you know what they did? They kicked her off the show. Except Vanessa could win. I think that is a conspiracy
it
theory.
Could be.
That is very true.
Yeah, the exclusion of Kata did provide a much clearer path for Vanessa.
Yeah.
Because I think in this episode, it was evident that it was quite obvious playing out that she'd be crowned. It would have been more tough with Kata, for sure. I don't know if they, like, necessarily, like, did that so that Vanessa could win, but because it happened, made it easier, for sure.
I know, but, like, could you crown Vivaldi?
No. I would have sent her home when she broke the rules and brought a phone.
Oh, my God. Wait. Consequences? What do you mean? Oh, also, I have a theory about that, too. I do think that RuPaul is trying not to reject people and cancel them. So I think that Vivaldi got to stay because they're like, well, there's you can redeem yourself.
And I guess when you think about, like, Scarlett in Down Under wasn't disqualified for the blackface conversation. So I guess a phone is not as bad.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's weird because that was in the past. And this is actively she presently brought a phone.
Because Scarlett made it to the finals, right?
Yeah,
with blackface,
top four,
and we were like, if there's going to be a UK season or a Down Under season two, then it kind of can only be ketamine.
God, I know, it was like you have to have a safe bet.
Yeah, because you didn't let any black people or brown people in after the third episode.
Ketamine saved Down Under We all know this. Like, if ketamine didn't win, drag could not continue.
I will just forever stand by the fact, like, you had electroshock right there. Like, just crown the underdog.
Oh, and then yeah,
crown
right.
her.
Yeah. Poopy gag.
Yeah, electroshock is the next drag superstar. She's hot out of drag. She's hot
she's
in drag.
Hottest. She's the hottest.
Yeah, I want to taste that tooth gap.
She is the hottest drag racer. I claim that. Like, I think.
My God.
She's the only reason I stuck with that season.
Yeah. She was great.
Electra gave us a show. Electra gave us lip syncs, which I have not been getting from Drag Race Holland. So, you know, and I hope to get from Drag Race UK, as long as people will stop doing that move where they just fall on their knees and Victoria Scone. I know.
That's what we do in the UK. We haven't mastered the death drop yet.
No, instead of a death drop, it's like a hurt your knees.
A fall down.
You know, yeah. The death fall flop. Down.
The death flop.
The death flop. So this death flop move was very, very well used in the previous season by literally everyone. Lawrence did it. What's her face did it as well multiple times. She was the technical lipstick assassin that no one acknowledged was a lipstick assassin. She's like, I've survived 3 lip sync. I guess I'm the lip sync assassin for the season. And then Bimini Bun Boulash was like, we'll see. Anyway, because I mean, the lip sync assassin of the season was clearly Tace, but yeah. The other one, what was her name? It was so funny. She's skinny, she's black.
Oh,
she's
Tia Coffee.
Tia Coffee. Tia Coffee was like, yeah, I'm a lip sync assassin. You're a lip sync survivor. That was there was no assassinating going on, honey. anyway, so this death flop. death collapse onto the knees needs to end. It's not dramatic. It's not good. You know what I would love is for someone to just kind of like slink down, you know what I mean, like stick a leg out and then just kind of like, you know, it's not a death drop, but it's like a, you just kind
it's
of
like glide, it's like a glide, glide. Into
something different.
I think that would be gorgeous, and I don't know why no one's done it. Or just go to the wall, lean against it, slink down, and then, you know, sexily crawl on the floor or something. I don't know, just give me more.
Last woman once sang.
Okay, but honestly, I did watch the final lip sync twice. It was kind of a wash for me. You know, I think Vanessa won by coming out in gold and shaving her head. Like, that was the win for me. She claimed that when she had a reveal underneath the dress that was poorly formed, the bottom half of her the top half of the outfit was money. The bottom half was basic. And then when she took it off, it wasn't that great.
And also Puni did a reveal, but those are not even really reveals.
She
in
took
my opinion.
Off her jacket.
Those aren't reveals. Yeah. Those are like progressions, perhaps, like a progression in the look. Yeah. But
we are so shady. It's like,
there's
got
to be
reveal.
More. Like the language needs to develop a little further, because like things get called reveals that are not reveals.
Yeah, taking a glove off is not a reveal.
No, there needs to be like an industry-wide reassessment of like the quality of reveals. And like, this is what is a reveal. This new vocab term is what that is. You know what I mean?
And honestly, I think that Puni is a great performer. I don't think she's a good competitor. So I think Puni in isolation must be wonderful to watch. Puni, when competing against another drag queen, you know, it just kind of felt like, okay.
In this lip sync, it felt obvious the whole time it was going to be Vanessa anyway.
She killed the interview portion. Drag Race is a pageant on TV, and she killed the interview portion. I'm telling you, that story with her father?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Made me cry.
You know,
it's
like,
good. It's her real life.
My dad wanted to be something that I'm not. I went through my final surgery and I was like, Dad, it's done. I'm finally me. He's like, I no longer have a child. And he just owned her. And she was like, fine.
Yeah.
You. I'm moving on. And then he called her to apologize.
Yeah.
She can't act, but she can give you a story.
Which and is like further proof that it's true and real. Yeah.
I'm telling you, I actually think that Vanessa can act. She can act as her damn self. And her acting as herself is Oscar worthy. I mean, she will channel her tears and find her stories, and she will give, you know, the way that she talked about her boyfriend, the way that she talked about her father, the way that she talked to her transition, the way that she talked about being rejected as a trans woman in the drag community. Mm-hmm, like, she knows how to channel a story. Like, Vanessa kills the interview portion.
Very lovable.
She won. I mean, you could even tell, like, during the interview, the Cosmo woman, who is the editor-in-chief of Cosmo. before I get canceled. She literally, after Vivaldi was like, Vivaldi's everything, she's like, oh, okay, yeah. After Vanessa shared her story, she was like, oh my God, thank you. You have such an open heart. You know, like, she was legit floored. Mm-hmm. Vanessa killed the interview portion, and that won her Drag Race. Because she only has one win.
Yeah, wild.
Pooney has two.
Mm-hmm.
And Vivaldi has one.
Kata had three. Yeah, fourth place.
Oh, no, no. Wins don't count on Drag Race.
Yeah, that's the thing now.
Apparently, Fred makes his own freaking choices, yeah.
No, literally, wins mean nothing. It's just, here's the thing. This is the only season of Drag Race besides Sasha Velour's season where the person that won, it just happened to be a good day. It literally was like, wow, you did really well today. Here's the crown.
Yeah. It has. I don't think Drag Race has been a competition for a while. You know what I mean? Like, we all know it's a TV show with competition aspects. And I think sometimes that's too a positive and sometimes that is a negative within the show.
That was way too real. It's a TV show with competition aspects.
I love that. I mean, yeah, that's very accurate.
That was so shady while still being so polite. And this is why we love Philip Brown.
That's why it's not a sport, because it's kind of on the fly made up.
Yeah, it's like whatever the queens want to happen and whatever the producers want to happen will happen. And that's why we love it, because it's absolute pure drama and madness. But
and they make us mad on purpose, which keeps us coming back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that goes back to that thing as well. It's like, there's always someone in the top three or top four. We're like, you're not winning. And RuPaul will make it very clear that person's not winning, but they just set us up. So then we're like, no, like, Rosé was robbed. And then we're like, oh, they've got me again. They've got me again.
Rosé was not robbed.
Yeah, I don't think Rosé was robbed, but I think...
You can always, if you can't make Ru laugh in that interview, you will not be in the...
Just get your bag.
And if that's what you wear in the final four lip sync...
And I think the red tree look as well from
bad.
Oh, not the broken foot, like dragging.
I know.
And pretending to be a tree.
Get out of here, I know.
Oh my God. Okay, well, we want to say that in crowning our third trans queen.
Two in a row.
Two in a row, but it's the third within the international franchise. Trans people, we love you. We love your artistry, and you deserve to be a part of this community. And we're so proud that we have, you know, three trans queens in the situation.
Yeah, saving lives.
You know, Victoria Scone, we're here for you as an AFAB queen. Can I get a drag king, please?
Can they change that phrase again? May the best woman win. May the best drag queen win. May the best drag artist win. Are they really going to go there? By season 20.
May the best. I have a new catchphrase, and maybe they'll use it. May the best drag royalty. I think that'd be cute.
Doesn't rhyme with slay though.
Does it rhyme with play? Unclear. But I came to. okay, so we could talk for hours, because Philip, you are one of our favorite people.
Thank you.
What you do when you draw, what you do when you sew, what you do when you sassily read Drag Race warms my heart. So thank you.
Thank you.
But we have one request of you, because we believe in fervent, passionate, consensual stalking of all of our guests. Mm-hmm. So where can people find you, lift you up in a consensual manner, and maybe send a DM or two so that you can start drawing?
Yeah. Slide into my DMs anytime. I think the best place to find me is on Instagram, and my name is at O, which is O-H underscore Renette, which is R-E-I-N-E-T-T-E. So pretend to be French and you'll find me.
Yeah. It's like queen in French, but like un petit.
A little queen.
Because she's a Renette, not a Reine, a Renette. It kind of like if, what's it, Electra Fence? If Electra Fence wins, she's going to be a Renette.
She's a little queen. Little queen.
Oh, the pocket gays. God love them. God love them. They're such a good vacation from the tall ones. that being said, everyone, I usually have some like wise words that I want to share with everyone, but I think that since we just crowned our second trans queen this year, I mean,
those wins speak for
the
themselves.
Only thing I can say is, you know, as the pandemic barrels through, not every queer space is opening, so just make sure that every queer space is a welcoming space for all queer people, because we need those spaces. That is so important and so powerful and so needed in this day and age and time where, you know, we don't always have space. So, you know, make sure that you're nice to the people that you don't want to screw in a bar.
Yes, everyone is deserving of your respect.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm just going to make a little announcement. I'm going to be featured on a live podcast this Wednesday for the 100th episode of Spark Parade with friend of the pod, Adam Untz.
Awesome.
So definitely check out Spark Parade. It's an awesome podcast that features artists talking about works that inspire them. And what so I will about? Be... I think I'm going to talk about slave play.
Nice.
Yeah. Philip, I don't know if you know, but, he did do a play in London before the pandemic. It was, it's this black writer, and he wrote a play called Slave Play that was like huge on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And so I do musical theater. So I refer to plays that don't have singing as straight plays, which is kind of funny.
Less fun.
Yeah. Right. So the writer is Jeremy O. Harris, and he wrote this amazing play called Slave Play, and it's all about sex, and relationships, but also interracial relationships. Okay. So he's able to really talk about, but not inclusive of anyone else that's like not white or black. So other POC people aren't really talked about on this show, but what's so powerful about Slave Play is it talks about all of the dynamics of being in an interracial relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's so powerful is like, it's something that like me as a black person, like I've experienced a lot, but like no one ever writes a play about it. And so I was like, oh my God, this is so powerful. Anyway. But that being said, we'll see you next week, guys. And it's just drag, but hooray, Vanessa.
Yeah.
And yay, UK. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Whispering Hunties is not endorsed by World Wonder, VH1, ICON, Free Canada, or any of their subsidiaries. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. Involve Drag Race and Canada Drag Race, and all names, pictures, all uses are registered trademarks and or copyrights to their respective copyright holders.
Thanks for listening to the Apocalypse Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, go to apocalypsepodcastnetwork.com. And remember, every time you support one of our sponsors, you're supporting the podcast you just heard.